The information presented in this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not substitute for or replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. You should always seek the advice of your physician or qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding medical conditions or treatments before undertaking any new healthcare regimen, fitness, or nutrition program. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something said in this podcast.
You are listening to Valor Voices, a production of the Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Program. The Valor Program is funded through grants from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. The points of view and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the podcast authors and do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. Here's your host.
Hello, I'm Chief Steve Petrilli with the Valor Program and host for this Valor Voices podcast. I am currently the Chief of Police with the Normal, Illinois Police Department and have over 24 years of experience in law enforcement, and I'm excited to be with you today. Today I'm joined by our guest, Dr. Greg Huron. Greg, thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. It's great to be here.
Greg, could you take a moment and just give us a little bit of background about yourself and so the audience can get to know you a little more?
Thanks, Steve. I am a licensed chiropractor who's been practicing for over 30 years, and my practice covers everyone from children to everyday people, all the way up to high-end professional athletes. And I've made it my goal and quest to constantly study how the body works naturally. And I am really excited to be here and share some of that information and have a great discussion with you as how it relates to officers.
That's excellent, Greg. I appreciate that intro, and that's exactly what we're going to do today, is we're going to dig a little bit deeper on some, you know, maybe some little-known knowledge as it relates to physical health, hormonal health, and things like that that are very important to the health and wellness of our officers that are working the street. So, Greg, I kind of want to kick it off with a question that I'm gonna pull from my knowledge and experience of being in the field for a little while. I like I said in the intro, I am currently the chief of police, but I've been in law enforcement for over 24 years. And one thing that I've noticed over the course of my career, from the time that I was hired through, you know, all of my experiences in law enforcement, is that we generally bring officers into the job in good general physical and mental health. But then what we tend to see over the course of time, I've kind of seen this repeated over and over again, is we tend to take these healthy individuals that walk into this career field, we tend to subject them to 20, 30 years of trauma based on the experiences that they all kind of go through the course of this career, with little to no guidance on how to navigate that. So, Greg, could you kind of speak to that a little bit on, you know, what working in a high-stress environment with, you know, varying sleep cycles and some of the traumatic things that they deal with on a daily basis, like what are some experiences or some input that you could kind of give us on that?
Well, Steve, let me just say thank you for your years of service. I mean, we can talk a lot about a lot of different hormones, but I'd really like to focus in on two, and one main one, which is cortisol, and adrenaline is the second. It's just a fact that those hormones can be helpful to your body, and you need those as officers to get through your everyday. But out of balance, which can happen very quickly, can create major, major health issues. And I think you know these, you've seen these in your officers, and I think we can help uncover why some of that's happening, and maybe we can even get to some resolution or some great ideas for them to get through it.
That's great. And that's exactly, you know, when you talk about the stressors, you know, the C word always comes to mind, right? Cortisol. And cortisol, I think, has taken on a lot of different personas, if you will, amongst, you know, the general population and officers in general, as to what really is its role. And a lot of times cortisol gets really a negative connotation. Can you kind of talk through maybe some of the negative connotations behind cortisol, the hormone cortisol, but then also maybe touch on what are some good things about cortisol and,
yeah,
and that stress hormone that we deal with?
Absolutely. So one of the first things to understand about cortisol is that almost every single cell in your body has a receptor for cortisol. So there's cortisol impacting almost every cell in your body. It's the largest hormone to do that. And some of the really negative impacts of too much cortisol in your body is increased weight gain, particularly in your face and your belly. And as most of us know, weight gain in your belly, that type of fat is more unhealthy than any other type of fat on your body. It also causes more flushing and a rounder face. It causes increased blood pressure. For some of the older folk, it increases osteoporosis. Your skin has more bruising and purple stretch marks. And here's the big one. It increases muscle weakness. So you think of it as this hormone that can help you battle a stressful situation, physical and emotional, but it causes muscle weakness over long term when it's negatively impacting. And here's the other big one, mood swings. It is responsible for a large amount of our anxiety and depression. And finally, overextended chronic time of too much cortisol, it increases sex drive and increases thirst. So those are just some of the big things that step out off the top of my head.
Okay, and that's actually something that, you know, when you talk about the flushing of the face and weight gain and some of those things. So when we have a chronic cortisol response, would you consider that an inflammatory response, doctor? Are the two related?
So yes, absolutely. So that's a great question. And let me lead back a little bit to some of what cortisol does do in a positive way, which is anti-inflammatory. In a healthful amount, cortisol is anti-inflammatory in your body. I mean, some of us may have had an issue where we've acute injury to our knee and we've gotten a cortisol shot. That's designed to shotgun effect and get the cortisol the inflammation out of the body. But it also is supposed to help with metabolism, imbalance, memory formation, your water and salt balance, and your blood pressure.
And I think that is imperative, the officers especially understand this. I think that you've done a good job of differentiating between the acute stressor responses as it relates to cortisol, and then really what sounds like when cortisol becomes the biggest issue is when we have these chronically elevated levels of cortisol that then lend to some of the other disease risks and things that you touched on there. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. And you know, I think one of the interesting things about cortisol is, like we said, how helpful it is in balance. It's anti-inflammatory in balance. And then over chronic time of too much cortisol, it becomes pro-inflammatory. So, you know, the cortisol is released in your body under normal healthy circumstances in little spurts throughout the day. And it's usually more in the morning and less as the evening or nighttime comes. You know, you've got a lot of officers on the overnight shift. Maybe their bodies are flip-flop that way. But for most people, it's released more in the morning, a little bit throughout the day, and dies down. But when you're under stress, cortisol kind of gets on that hamster wheel and just keeps dumping out through the day. Your body thinks it's helping, but clearly it's not.
So with cortisol, doctor, a couple follow-up questions, because as we speak to the health and wellness of officers, and this is such a robust topic, the stress response in the body and the role that cortisol plays. But for many officers, one of the biggest issues that we deal with on a disease risk is the phenomenon of insulin resistance. And a lot of times with insulin resistance, we know that there can be dysregulated blood sugar in the body. Can you kind of talk a little bit to how does cortisol play into the insulin resistance spectrum and the glucose response in the body and maybe some of those, what that kind of cascade looks like on a very high level?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me back up and say this. When we have a stressful situation, here's how your body responds. It's got these two hormones that it creates in the same place, basically the same place in your adrenal cortex. And it's your first response, and this could be something exciting. It could be you're competing in an athletic event, but it's also when there's danger or a large amount of stress. So adrenaline is produced first. And adrenaline, think of as your 911, your emergency hormone. And adrenaline's job is to help your body get more glucose out of the bloodstream into mostly your muscle tissues where you need it to perform under those circumstances. Shortly after that, your body dumps cortisol, which its job is to create more glucose or keep more glucose in the bloodstream. It causes your liver to dump more glucose into your bloodstream. So you've got one that throws the glucose into your muscles. You've got the other one dumping glucose out of your liver, and it also prevents it from going into other tissues. And here's the big one, slows down everything else. So it says, I don't need digestion right now, so I'm going to slow down my digestive tract. And that's a whole other myriad of health issues. So The long and the short of it, back to your original question, is when you have too much constant glucose in your bloodstream, which these hormones are creating under too much stress, it causes the insulin, which normally helps you process all that, your body to become more insulin resistant, or your insulin is, I want to say it in simple terms, your insulin is used up. Your insulin is no longer able to access, and it just creates another spiral, which leads in many cases to diabetes, among other health conditions.
Yeah, because we understand that, you know, the what we want to really strive for from on that health and wellness spectrum is to be more insulin sensitive, right? With that, when the pancreas in the body is releasing insulin, that it's allowing that insulin to drive the sugars and things into the muscle cells, into the brain, to be used as fuel and not to be, you know, chronically hanging out in the bloodstream, raising those blood sugar levels, which can lead to a lot of chronic health conditions. So we definitely understand that the cortisol plays a role in that whole process. And I think that that's an interesting nexus between the two.
No, I was just going to say, you know, you nailed it, because under normal again, back to normal healthy conditions, that insulin is what helps your body process the sugar. And like you said, we've got to get it to other areas too. We've got to get it to the brain. We've got to get it to other things. And I want to say your body gets worn out and the insulin is no longer productive. It gets used up, if you want to look at it that way. So you no longer have enough insulin around, and your body's going, hey, I can't help you anymore with that. So you don't process the glucose, and the glucose hangs around even more.
Absolutely. So doctor, I kind of want to shift gears here a little bit and give the audience a little bit, some takeaways on, we know the inherent risks of law enforcement and the high stress environment, a lot of times the poor sleep cycles based on shift work and things like that, and how they accumulate. We've kind of touched on the chronic, elevated cortisol and some of the issues that can happen there. What do you think when we start talking to officers about building that resilience, building that stress hardiness, how do we kind of take some of the known factors of this profession and build a resilience or a stress hardiness?
That's a great question, and a lot of them will sound familiar, and hopefully there'll be some new ones out there that I can help share. When I talked about that stressful situation, adrenaline gets dumped, then cortisol. You know, the other thing cortisol is supposed to do is it signals your brain under stressful situations to lower the level of acute stress response. So it's tough. I don't have to tell you, it's tough in that stressful, traumatic situation to think clearly. But once you get that dump, once you get that cortisol dump, too much of it doesn't allow you to think clearly through that as the danger starts to lower. You're stuck in this sort of loop of like, I can't think as clearly as I'd like to. And I mean, no one wants that. So I just wanted to add that quickly. But, you know, starting out how to prevent or how to guard yourself for that, there's a lot of real simple basics. And time again, this is true in other areas of health, but particularly with cortisol. One is you need to, regardless of your shift or time, you need to really try to regulate what time you go to bed and what time you wake up. I know under emergency situations, that's a different story, but it's a huge piece to try to get the same bedtime if possible. There are other things. If you're working the normal day shift or your normal day person, really, really limit your caffeine after 2 to 3 p.m. That can really kick back and cause a bad cortisol response as well. And I think the biggest thing, which we can talk more about, is looking at what foods you eat and drinks you have that are pro-inflammatory. You've already got too much cortisol. You're already having an inflammatory response in your body. How can you prevent that from getting worse? And on the flip side, what anti-inflammatory foods can you consume to help you balance that?
I think those are all excellent points. And you did a great job of kind of, you know, helping take the stress response that we're feeling, that chronic stress response is the one that we're really honing in on, and then relating it back to some easy lifestyle things that when we start talking about, you know, the quality of the foods that we consume, getting those normal sleep cycles, being cognizant of, physical activity, which is kind of where I want to go next. What could we do from a physical fitness standpoint, from working out, and that could range from, the beginner with very little experience, you know, is there any benefit to walking all the way up through weight training? Can you kind of talk about how a little bit of, you know, any of those activities that you don't necessarily need to jump in and be doing a, you know, a 500-pound back squat in a gym to see any type of benefits from this? It really can be something basic, right? So could you kind of talk through that a little bit for us?
Absolutely. Steve, you nailed it. It's about looking where you are today and moving forward. So if you're not working out at all, get up out of your bed the next morning and do 5 jumping jacks. Can you commit to 5 jumping jacks or 5 push-ups every morning before you do anything else every day? And after 30 days, it becomes a habit. Maybe you start to add a few more in. And going for a walk, and I don't care if it's 5 minutes. It's so important to improve from where you are. It will change your heart rate, your blood pressure. It'll change your mental aspect as well. And likewise, if you, you know, take a look at, if you are exercising, take a look and make sure you're getting a balance between strengthening, stretching, and your cardiovascular health. And we've talked about how much cortisol affects blood pressure and heart rate. So we want to have those, we want to have those dialed in. We want to have those as good as you can get. So it's absolutely vital to start wherever you are today and keep moving forward.
I think that's great, because that's really what we're looking to do here, I think, is to capture all experience levels, age ranges. You know, I mean, this is things that are applicable to just about any officer given, no matter what amount of time they have on the job, no matter what their current state of physical fitness is. Really, the lesson and the message that I'm hearing from you is, hey, anything that we do can help move the needle in the right direction as it relates to physical activity.
Absolutely. And, you know, Steve, things like having a beer or a glass of wine at the end of the day is okay. It's the one is good. Two is not twice as good. And so it's some of those things in moderation. And that's a big one to watch. But the other two, which are to me are related, meditation is a great thing. Meditation has been proven time and time again to help bring down that blood pressure, that heart rate, and balance the body, especially your what we call your circadian rhythms, which cortisol is a big part of. We want to balance those rhythms out. And even in the acute short term, gets to my all-time favorite, which is your breathing. And Steve, you and I have talked about it a little bit. You know, there's different types of breathing, but breathing can help you in an acute situation. And I don't want to, you know, it's your wheelhouse here, but, you know, knocking on the door to serve a warrant or something, you know, can you do before you make that knock, you know, take 10 seconds and work on some breathing, or in your downtime before you start your shift or come into work. I mean, breathing is also been researched time and time again to be so helpful in balancing all your body rhythms, but particularly cortisol.
That's excellent. And I think that was exactly where I wanted to go with kind of our next batch of takeaways, if you would, on, you know, what can our officers on the street, what are some of the methods and methodologies that they can start to employ immediately? And you touched on breathing. And I think breathing is one that's so, a lot of times, not even really, we don't discuss it enough. And it's something that's simple, it's accessible, it's free. And with a little bit of knowledge, a lot of us could employ this with some very, very good results. So when we talk about breathing, and we kind of have to discuss the central nervous system a little bit, can you talk about the difference, doctor, between being in a sympathetic nervous state and a parasympathetic nervous state, and maybe how breathing is kind of the nexus that gets us between both of those and the impacts that has on cortisol?
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, so for people to understand sympathetic and parasympathetic and all those nervous system concepts are really great. But what we're dealing with is your body needs moments in life where you need to speed things up, and other times it needs to speed things down. You just ate a meal 30 minutes ago. Your body needs to speed up digestive juices being released and digesting your food. When you have a stressful situation, you need the other things we talked about. So creating a balance in your sympathetic nervous system is vital, and breathing has been proven time and time again to create that balance. Again, it's like we talked about cortisol. You know, too much is not good. Not enough is not good. We want to have that happy medium. And so breathing is absolutely one way to do that. And there are some other ways to talk about breathing there, I'm sure we'll get to that, but real simple in the moment or more long-term.
And what I wanted to touch on even a little bit further with that is, you know, a lot of officers find themselves in that situation that you described there, that, you know, maybe you've been tasked with serving a warrant, or You know, you're responding to one of those higher priority calls. And for a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of commonalities there. It's an officer needs assistance, or, you know, there's a crime, a violent crime in progress, that as soon as we are dispatched to those calls right away, we kind of feel those physiological changes in the body. The blood pressure goes up, you know, depending on the situation. Sometimes that visual acuity can be a little bit skewed. Our auditory acuity can be a little bit distorted. And that really is that sympathetic nervous response, right? That it's kind of the fight, flight, or freeze. And then we don't want to be existing too long in that type of nervous state. How do we get back to a parasympathetic response in the body, which is essentially our body feels like we're okay, we're going to be safe. So for the officer out there on the street that may, you know, be hearing this and going, you know what, I can relate to that. Do you have any type of simple breathing patterns? I know that there's several out there, from box breathing to different, you know, nasal breathing, mouth breathing for different time frames. Can you kind of maybe give our listeners some tips on, hey, what would be an easy cycle that if you find yourself in that sympathetic nervous response, that you could kind of revert to some breathing patterns that might help with that?
So, Steve, when you're in a non-stressful situation, or that stress situation has calmed down a bit and you're free to use your hands again, we can start with really the quickest one, which is what I call, or most people call, nasal breathing. So it's you basically take your thumb and you close off one of your nostrils and you breathe in through the other one that's open. You switch your finger to close that one off and release the other one and breathe out through that one. That's a real simple one and maybe not the most effective, but in the moment when you have 10 seconds, you can do a few of those and that will already help to balance your system out, your breathing out. The one you refer to is, though, my favorite one, is my go-to, which is the box breathing. So in essence, just think of a box and think of 4 seconds. So you're going to inhale through your nose for 4 seconds. You're going to hold for 4 seconds. You're going to exhale for 4 seconds. And then you're going to hold for 4 seconds again. Just think of it like a box. And 3 or 4 rounds of that has been shown time and time again to really create that balance in your system.
Absolutely. And I think that box breathing, you know, is a very effective tool, because that is something that it really is accessible to anybody, anywhere, anytime. It's a hands-free approach. It's just kind of training yourself that, hey, when I feel myself kind of fall into that sympathetic nervous state, what do I need to control at this point outside of the situation at hand? If I can start balancing my breathing a little bit, there's a lot of positive effects that come from that. And I think that this all really ties together nicely with what we've been talking about all day, is essentially recognizing that stress response in the body, which is going to result with some elevated cortisol, that hormone cortisol, and then putting some practical, systems in place to balance that. And we've talked through things, you know, as simple as, hey, you know what, we need to be cognizant of physical activity, whether that's resistance training, walking, getting some type of physical activity. Also being aware of the situations that we're in and maybe using, you know, some breathing patterns or some other type of, realization, through meditation or controlling our breathing to kind of help us get out of that stressful state. So I think everything that we've talked about in relation to that is accessible to people and really can be incorporated as part of a daily routine to help see some benefits.
I agree. And you know, you hit another one, which we didn't go into too much detail. And I know, like I said, you don't have to be a experienced yogi to know how to meditate, because one of my favorite and go-to, I've taught it to my children over the years and working on my grandchildren now, but it's a real simple meditation where you close your eyes and you're going to breathe in and hold. And as you hold on a chalkboard, you write the number 10 with a piece of chalk. And then as you breathe out, you erase it. And then you go to 9. Erase it. 8, 7, 6, 5, all the way down to 1. It's something I use when sometimes, I know we all go through this, you wake up in the middle of the night and you're not even stressed, but your brain's awake. And it's a great way to get back to that deeper quality sleep as well. So I know we both agree meditation is great. And that's a real simple one I wanted to at least teach to everybody that they can implement right away.
And I think it's great. Greg, and I can tell you that as our time gets close to closing here today, I want to thank you for all the knowledge, all the all the simple approaches to, you know, hey, how can we put some simple systems in place to often mitigate a lot of these stressors that we may or may not necessarily be aware of. So I want to thank you, and really we appreciate you being with us today, and appreciate your time and attention to such an important topic.
Thanks, Chief. I appreciate you and everything you do for our community, and I'm really honored to be here and help any of the officers I can.
Great. So for our listeners, thank you all for listening to this podcast. I encourage you to visit the Valor website at www.valorforblue.org for more information about this topic and other topics related to officer safety, health, and wellness. And remember, it's never too late to make changes that impact your physical well-being. So until next time, stay safe, stay well, and be healthy. Thank you.
The Valor Program is dedicated to delivering training, developing resources, and conducting research to improve the safety and wellness of law enforcement professionals across the country. For additional information regarding the Valor Program, please visit valorforblue.org, download the app on the Apple or Google Play Store, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, and the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, is committed to making our nation's communities safer through resources, developing programs, and providing grant funding opportunities to support state, local, and tribal criminal justice efforts. All are available at no cost. Please visit www.bja.gov to learn more.
This project was supported by grant number 2019-VIBX-K001, awarded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the U.S. Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, which also includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, the Office for Victims of Crime, and the Office of Sex Offender Sentencing, Monitoring, Apprehending, Registering, and Tracking, or SMART. Points of view or opinions are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice.